You're with us for the morning show as we bring you candidate conversations leading up to Tuesday's partisan primary election. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Jessica King is a Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 6th congressional district. She seeks to challenge Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman, who was first elected to the office in 2014. King will face Democrats Michael Beardsley and Matthew Boer in the August partisan primary. Are you a voter? What questions do you have for candidate Jessica King? We're at 800-642-1234. Jessica King is a lawyer, former state senator, and former Oshkosh City Council member. Jess, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Why do you see yourself as the best Democratic candidate to face Republican Representative Glenn Grothman in November?
Well, I think during this time of recession and pandemic, we want somebody that can hit the ground running on day one. I have that previous elected experience in local government and state government. But importantly, the time I served on the Oshkosh Common Council, which is the 8th largest city in the state, was during a time of recession and also during a time of flooding crisis for the state of Wisconsin. So I'm very familiar with the collaboration necessary to work with local government, state government, and the federal government to build out of the recession, you know, to fully recover. And I think that experience is incredibly relevant right now. In my professional life, I served as a U.S. bankruptcy trustee for the Department of Justice during the, representing people in the housing crisis in 2005, also looking at the recession in 2008, representing farmers, small businesses, and working families as they try to reorganize their debt to make it through recessions. And I think that working knowledge and experience of what did work, you know, whether it was loan modification programs or rental assistance programs, you know, what kind of tools do we have to facilitate the current recovery out of our current crisis? That's the experience we need. And that's what I can bring to the table.
If you were a member of Congress, what kind of economic relief measures would you support?
Well, right now, I think we have to continue supporting our state and local governments because they're facing a revenue shortfall. And I think it's really disingenuous of our federal counterparts, elected leaders, to not understand the urgency there. Because in the end of the day, as citizens, we're all dependent on our local and state units of government to provide services. And those services are needed whether you're in a recession or not. We need to support our local communities here. On day one. The other thing we need to do is really look at rent assistance. We need to make sure we don't have another eviction crisis or foreclosure crisis. So we really need to look at those programs and make sure that people can find stability in their homes so that way they can think about the other urgencies to recover as far as finding gainful employment and figuring out how to retool their businesses to take into account safety and an open economy.
Should Congress extend the $600 weekly unemployment benefits that expired at the end of last month?
I think right now that's the easiest proposal to move forward with because we need to keep money circulating in our economy. And until we have the long-term proposals to expand job opportunities that also allow for physical distancing and safety. That's what we have to do right now.
We're talking with Jess King, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, as we continue our candidate conversation ahead of Tuesday's partisan primary election. Joining in, you can, if you live in Manitowoc, Sheboygan, Port Washington, Mequon, another community in the district, what issues matter most to you? Do you live in Oshkosh, maybe Portage or Beaver Dam? What do you think Congress should be doing? We're at 800-642-1234. Jess, we've been asking candidates, if elected to Congress, what are three things? What are three things that you want to accomplish?
I want to make sure that medications are affordable for working families in the United States. I want to make sure that we pursue health care reform. Right now, the Supreme Court is deciding the constitutionality of the Affordable Health Care Act. And if that gets repealed, millions and millions of people will lose their health care coverage. And we can't go back to a system of discrimination due to pre-existing conditions, especially in light of COVID-19. So health care reform is a major issue for me. And then also looking at our infrastructure projects. In order to recover from a recession, we need to make sure we're supporting the building of our local bridges, roads, schools, looking at those physical infrastructure projects to spur the economy, and then also the opportunities we have to do that in a sustainable way to improve our climate in the future.
On the issue of healthcare, how would you change our country's healthcare system to better handle future pandemics?
Access is such an important issue. We need to make sure that people can actually feel like they can go to the doctor, that they have access to physicians, and that they can afford their medications. And right now, the Kaiser Family Foundation did a study saying that the average family healthcare plan costs employers and/or employees $20,000 a year, and that's not even for using it. So we fundamentally need to change. In Wisconsin right now, 20 of our 72 counties do not have an OBGYN. And that's just one example of the shortage we have on the provider side to actually provide treatment to people. And then when you expand that out to specialty providers, whether they're behavioral health providers or pediatrician, focused, physicians, we just need to make sure we have access to those professionals. And so there's a lot of work to be done. The United States is the third largest in population in the globe, and yet we pay the most expensive prices for our medication. The House of Representatives voted on H.R. 3, which would have allowed the federal government to negotiate prices. Even the Trump administration agrees with price negotiation for physician-administered pharmaceuticals, and Representative Grothman voted against it, and I want him to be held accountable for that.
Let's bring in a call now. Bob is joining us from Oshkosh with a question. Hi, Bob.
Hello. I'm wondering, with the COVID crisis specifically, but also the strain on local and state governments, we really need Medicare for all. And I know that's going to save the state billions of dollars when that happens. So what does the candidate think about that?
Bob, thank you. Jess, go ahead.
Well, I do believe as part of the reform package, we do need to reach universal coverage. Every person in the United States of America should have access to coverage. Now, I in the last 7 years, I've worked in the healthcare industry representing hospitals and patients against health insurance companies to overturn wrongfully denied medical bills. And I can tell you, I've recovered millions and millions of dollars for hospitals and for their patients. And we definitely need reform. We definitely need universal coverage. I think it's just getting through the hurdles of how we do that. And the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about is reimbursement rates. And again, we need to make sure we're developing a reimbursement structure that acknowledges the geography of our country. We are the fourth largest country in terms of geography, and we need to make sure that real rural people are not shut out from access to professionals. And we need to set up a reimbursement schedule that acknowledges the low population density service, similar to how we organize our transportation funding. And that's going to be the key to success, to make sure we have universal coverage, that we're reimbursing professionals, to make sure we have rural care providers and small community providers. And that's the future.
We are having candidate conversations leading up to the elections today. It is Democratic candidate Jess King, who is running for Wisconsin's 6th congressional district. The district, it stretches from central part of the state to Lake Michigan and includes Portage, Oshkosh, Fond du Lac, Manitowoc, Sheboygan. How do you think Congress should tackle big issues like the coronavirus, like unemployment, climate change, education, health care, immigration? What letter grade would you give to Congress? Which proposals are you following in the House or Senate? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with candidate Jess King here on the Ideas Network.
If
It is Canada Conversations here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Jess King, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. She aims to challenge Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman. She first takes on Michael Beardsley and Matthew Boer in the partisan primary election Tuesday. Who is your vote for the Democratic Party in the 6th District? Are you voting for Michael Beardsley, Matthew Boer, or Jess King? What is your thinking? What issues matter most to you in congressional elections? Join in 800-642-1234. And candidate Jess King stays with us for 10 more minutes. Jess, you were talking there about infrastructure earlier. Do you support the ongoing expansion of Highway 23 from Fond du Lac to Sheboygan, which was delayed over concerns from environmental advocates?
You know, that's the first time I've been asked about that question. I have to get some more research. I really don't have an opinion formed on that. I'm not aware of the issue.
Let's look at climate. Governor Evers has set a goal of our state becoming carbon free by 2050. Is that a reasonable goal? Is that doable?
It has to be. The climate crisis is right now. We have about 9 years to truly prevent something from irreversible happening in our communities and in the world. I'm really excited about Vice President Biden's commitment to rejoin the Paris Agreement, and I'm very excited about his plans to revive what I call the Civilian Conservation Corps, but he calls the Civilian Climate Corps. I think we have this opportunity as part of our recovery from the recession to give people who are currently unemployed purpose, and to give our young people purpose, and to learn stewardship of our land. And whether that's looking to programs that restore our urban forests, or rural programs that restore our wetlands, or working with our rural entrepreneurs in, you know, focusing on planting cover crops to capture carbon, and honestly to resolve our nitrate issue and our water systems. There's so many things that we can do, and we have to really look at that mutual benefit of not only recovering from the recession, but also meeting our sustainability goals. I think it's completely doable.
In particular, on water quality, what could Congress do to help improve water for residents in the 6th District?
Well, we have to look at lead remediation. We have in Wisconsin over 82 water systems that have an unacceptable level of lead in their water. And we need support to remediate that. Our local and state governments need that support. We also need to look at, again, I mentioned nitrates before, and we should have a collaborative partnership with our rural farmers, whether they be small farmers or large farmers. One of the interesting challenges we have in Wisconsin is the increased ownership by foreign corporations of our agriculture lands. And unfortunately, when you have folks who don't live here owning your land, they're not as cautious or conscientious with their conservation stewardship. And it may be that we need to put some economic incentives in place to make sure that people are actually, and corporate entities are actually using conservation practices, you know, whether that's the planting of rye as a cover crop here, or looking at other ways to make sure that we're capturing carbon, we're managing our nitrates, and we're making sure they don't go into our water supply.
We're talking with Jess King, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, as we continue our candidate conversations ahead of Tuesday's partisan primary. Taking your calls, your questions as well for the candidate, 800-642-1234. Jess, Wisconsin has 20 adult prisons, roughly half by our count, are in the 6th Congressional District. What needs to change in our state's prison system?
Well, definitely with the recent situations, we have to look at the health of the folks who work in those correctional facilities, and also the folks who are currently housed in those facilities. When I was a state senator for the state's the 18th state Senate district, that also had the highest number of facilities in the state. And We have to make sure that those environments are safe, not only for the employees, but also for the folks who are serving their sentences during that time. Now, fundamentally, I think we also have to take an opportunity to look at our criminal justice reforms and looking at the number of people that we are choosing to put on a path of incarceration. I think there's been a lot of studies on that, and we have to decide what we're going to do to rebuild and restore people. I think about all of the diversion courts for veterans and chemical dependency courts that are and people, and honestly, mental health court system diversion programs, and those things are aimed to address the root causes that may cause people to become law offenders. And I think it's important to support those kind of diversion programs so we're not increasing our incarcerated population. And it's a complicated issue, but it's something we can attack from a few different angles.
So what I'm hearing is diversion programs would help address prison overcrowding in Wisconsin?
That's right. That's exactly right. And then there's definitely some overcrowding situations with DCI and some of the other facilities. And we have to really decide, you know, is that really solving the root cause problems? We also have to, again, support those correction officers that work in those facilities, and also support the ancillary staff. We have a lot of medical facility, medical trained folks in those facilities, a lot of educators, people who provide those mental health services. We need to really be looking at what kind of services are we providing there, and are those people safe and able to do their job too?
On the topic of policing, we've seen demonstrations across the country calling for police reform after the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and other people of color. What should Congress do?
Well, if I was in the House of Representatives today, I would have voted for the George Floyd measures that were brought before the House. I think those are systemic changes that need to be brought. What fundamentally, if justice is denied for one of us because of corrupt practices, it's denied for all of us. And we really need to restore that, the checks and balances and the confidence in our legal system and in our policing system. And one of the ways we can do that is by expanding the office of the Department of Justice, or actually adequately funded. It's not so much expansion, but looking at funding the special prosecutors and making sure that they're investigating every officer involved death. And I think that level of transparency and checks and balances to make sure that the processes were followed properly is what we need right now in the United States. I know some people have responded to that position saying that's too big a burden to recruit people into law enforcement. And my response is, as a lawyer, I know every day when I was practicing law that if I didn't do my job right, I would be held accountable by civil action. And that's also true for small business owners, and that's true for physicians and several other occupations. And I believe that because we have that accountability point, we all do our job better. And so I really think the way to go is looking at the special prosecutor funding at the federal level. But then at the state level, we have to remember that, you know, a lot of these, because I was in state or local government too, you know, looking at your local police and fire commission and talking with, you know, your local community folks to make sure that they're recruiting, and then their policies are actually building communities of trust. A lot of that can happen at the local level. And I encourage people to get more involved with their local electeds regarding the policing locally.
Let's take a look at broadband. Every year, our state provides millions in grants aimed at expanding access to high-speed internet. What more could be done, especially in Congress and for your part of the state, the 6th District?
We definitely have to build the infrastructure. I think right now, you know, again, we're seeing the fragility of the system we created when we're talking about whether or not schools will be open and closed, and what we're forcing school districts to do to provide hotspots and trying to get internet into the hands of our student population and families who don't have it. I truly believe we should tackle the broadband problem, that there's a challenge, the same way that we tackled rural electrification. You know, I believe that broadband needs to become that level of public utility because I really don't see a future without it. And we need to get to a point where we can make sure that every American can access broadband.
On the topic of schools, should all schools be open or closed to in-person instruction this fall?
Well, what I can tell you is we have quite a few school districts in Wisconsin, and each of them are trying to understand their local sensitivities that they have. I myself have a 4-year-old son that is enrolled in 4K. And as a parent, I have to tell you, I've been asking a lot of questions of my local education providers as far as, you know, what policies are they putting in place to keep my son safe? What is it that I can do as a parent to make sure that, you know, we are doing things in our household to be responsible stewards to make sure we're not passing this disease on to other people. It's going to be a challenge, and I'm glad to see that many, many of the school districts have opened the online virtual options in their school districts to allow parents who can stay home to stay home. I fundamentally think what most parents and working families are struggling with right now is that they need to work, and they feel this economic crisis of, you know, the either the two-parent household where they're both working or the one-parent household that has to work. And if their children are too young, how do they stay home?
Jess, we're out of time. Jess, thank you for joining us.
Oh.
Jess King is a Democratic candidate for the 6th Congressional District. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we bring you candidate conversations leading up to Tuesday's partisan primary. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Michael Beardsley is a Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He seeks to challenge Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman, who was first elected to the office in 2014. Beardsley will face Democrats Matthew Boer and Jessica King, who we just heard from in Tuesday's primary. Are you a voter? What questions do you have for candidate Michael Beardsley? We're at 800-642-1234. Michael Beardsley is an IT consultant from Oshkosh. Mike, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Why do you see yourself as the best Democratic candidate to face Republican Representative Glenn Grothman in November?
Sure. So like you mentioned, I'm an IT consultant here in Oshkosh. I've grown up as in the Fox Valley my whole life, growing up in Freedom, Wisconsin. So I've been living a normal life, normal person. I went to UW Oshkosh, got my IS degree for information systems, and that leads me to where I am today in the IT field. So what I think sets me apart from the other candidates in this race, then from Grothman specifically, I feel like I'm the one that's running on specific plans that are one, most popular with people and voters in my district and the whole country. And also, what I think will do the most good for people once they're actually passed. And another point is I'm a fresh face in politics. I'm coming in here with a new approach, with new energy that's trying to make us have a better future instead of returning to the past or returning to normalcy, which we're hearing a lot of today from some people.
When you say specific plans, if you are elected to Congress, what are three plans that you want to accomplish?
Yeah. So my top two big ones that really pushed me to go into this race, and I'll throw a third one in there as well. But the top ones are fighting climate change and addressing health care. So on the climate change side, I'm a big supporter of the Green New Deal and specifically focusing on how it can help rural communities, because I think that gets left behind too much in the conversation. And then also I'm a supporter of a single payer healthcare system, which is popularly known as Medicare for All. But again, I think this clears up the core of the issues that we're facing today with a for-profit private system that is our healthcare. And then the third one, I'll go with voting reform. So I think this is something that can help cure the, I'll call, hyper-polarization that we have today, where you have entrenched politicians on both sides and the divide is just growing wider. So if we enact congressional term limits and ranked choice voting, I think those are two things that will bring new voices to the table and make sure that we have the most popular voices at the table. And then also making sure there's more constant churn of representatives instead of people in office for decades, which just naturally you end up losing touch with what your district wants or what your district needs. So I think we need to get back to having the House of Representatives be what it was intended to be.
When you say voting reform, I'm wondering how you feel about campaign finance and how would you go about financing your campaign, what you feel about PACs?
Yeah, that's another one that I like to touch on in voting reform. So I'm very much against removing money from politics. So especially the big one is Citizens United, where we're allowing corporate money, dark money, whatever you want to call it. So my campaign's not taking any corporate PAC money, and I think it's wrong that we have that in our system today. I don't think our system should be funded by corporations when representatives are representing the people. So we should only be people powered and people financed.
Circling back to climate change, Governor Evers has set a goal for our state becoming carbon free by 2050. Is that a reasonable goal? Is that doable? And even in rural areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So that 2050 is the same date that a lot of plans throw out there, Green New Deal included. The Biden and Sanders task force for climate change that was put together came up with a plan and goal to hit 2035 to be carbon neutral. So that's only 15 years away. So I think it's definitely not just doable. I think it's needed. And I like to say, or I don't like to say, but if we don't address this climate change issue proactively, if we wait too long, then really all these other issues aren't going to matter at the end of the day, because we're going to be failing at the issue that matters the most.
All right. So what concrete steps must Congress do to help Wisconsin become carbon free?
Sure. Yeah. So the goal is to hit net zero greenhouse gas emissions. So how you do that is we need to invest more in zero emission vehicle infrastructure, whether that's personal vehicles or transport, bus or rail transportation. And then also on the manufacturing and agricultural side, there needs to be paths there for those industries to make sure that they're carbon neutral as well. And the big way to do this and the big thing that I support is a carbon tax. So this is essentially a tax on companies that use fossil fuels, use carbon. And it pushes the market or incentivizes these companies to move their operations to sustainable practices to lower their tax bill. Because if they keep doing the same thing that they're doing but burning fossil fuels, they're going to have a higher tax bill. So we need to put something in the market to make that shift. We also need to, for helping farmers specifically, a lot of things we need to do is around promoting the overhaul of our food system or transitioning to again, more sustainable food system, whether that's regenerative agriculture, shifting subsidies from these large corporate farms to back down to small and medium farms, because we have been seeing over the last decade or so, dairy farms have just been closing down at a pretty alarming rate. So if we shift these subsidies back to the farms that need them, while also having these subsidies be based around environmental initiatives. So one of the big things is incentives to actually transition to sustainable practices. So these struggling industries or industries that are just staying afloat can get access to these funds, transition their operations to renewable energies. So it's a win for the environment and win for these companies as well.
I'm going to jump in here and reintroduce. You were talking with Mike Beardsley, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, as we continue our candidate conversations ahead of the Tuesday partisan primary, taking your questions for Mike Beardsley at 800-642-1234. Mike, you mentioned reforming the tax structure around corporate taxes. How would you change our country's taxes on personal income?
Yeah, so I think the easiest first step to do is just go back to the levels that we were seeing decades ago, where we currently have a progressive income tax, and we need to continue with that. So, for example, someone making $12 an hour is paying the same income tax rate as someone making over $100 an hour. So if we put in more steps in there, raise the taxes on higher income, then I think that's a natural step in just going back to what we used to have.
Looking at the climate and the water, how could Congress help improve water quality for residents of the 6th District?
Yeah, so the first thing we need to do is actually have the Clean and Water Act be enforced. I know we have an administration in office right now that isn't too keen on enforcing these environmental regulations that we have in place. But clean water specifically, I think there needs to be more testing at the state and national level so we understand what the problem is, and then and just strengthen these strengthen the Clean Water Act to actually have clean water free and accessible as a human right that we all should have.
When you say strengthen the Clean Water Act, what do you mean by that?
Well, the Clean Water Act hasn't been touched since either the 80s or 90s. So there's a lot that has, I feel like, been modernized in technologies, and we're still sitting here with many residents in the 6th District either don't have any regulations because they're too rural, and there's no one enforcing these Clean Water Acts, or in the cities, it just hasn't changed. So I think we need to relook at what we can do to make sure water levels are safer than what we currently have.
Let's look at healthcare here for a moment. You mentioned Medicare for All. How would you change our country's healthcare system to better equip it to handle future pandemics?
Sure. So I think one of the big, I'll say, failures that we saw with this pandemic is we didn't act as a nation, we didn't act as a unit, and that comes from the federal level. So instead of being reactive and everyone doing their own thing, if we had a single payer system in place, which is already publicly ran by the federal government, everybody's already on the same plan. Everybody is under the same umbrella. So it makes mobilizing these efforts to do testing and care much more easy. When people don't even know which doctors they can go to, which doctors are in and out of the network, it adds confusion to the system for people that are trying to use it. And that includes what they're going to pay when they show up to the doctor and all these things. So I think there's just general confusion and unnecessary overhead with our current system. If we take out the for-profit side of this, for-profit insurance companies that are really essentially just making money off of our healthcare, and big pharma companies setting the price that they want, we enact a plan that's publicly ran, lower the cost, cut out the overhead, cut out the middleman, and it makes everything a lot more efficient.
How would you work with your lawmakers then to put a plan like that in place and get that type of traction, that type of change for a single-payer system? That's a big change.
Yeah. No, it's a very big change. So this is definitely something we can't just flip the switch and do overnight. So there has to be a transition plan in place. So what I'm most in favor of for what I'll call the transition is first putting a public option in place. This is essentially what the ACA or Obamacare was supposed to be, but it never ended up being, going into reality what it was intended to be as a public option, which is a public plan that people can buy into, but the old system still exists. So we have to have the intermediary step there, which is, again, still very popular, and again, something that should have been in place in the first place. Now, if we do that first step, then we can have the end goal as being single payer. But just working across the aisle and getting this done, this plan is very popular on the by Democratic supporters already. For the first 20 primaries for the presidential primary, all in exit polls voted in favor of having a single payer system.
I need to jump in right there with Democratic candidate Mike Beardsley, who's running for the 6th congressional district. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's Candidate Conversations here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Michael Beardsley, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He aims to challenge Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman, and he first takes on Matthew Bohr and Jess King in Tuesday's partisan primary. So who has your vote for the Democratic Party in the 6th? Are you voting for Michael Beardsley, Matthew Bohr, or Jessica King? What issues matter most to you in congressional elections? Join in, 800-642-1234. And candidate Mike Beardsley stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's look, Mike, at the economic realities facing your district. If you're a member of Congress, what kind of economic relief measures would you support amid the pandemic?
Sure. Pandemic specific, so COVID, I'll focus on COVID funding right now. I think the priorities of our elected leaders need to shift back to the people just in general. Just seeing last week or two a defense budget of over $700 billion being passed, and we all know even a small chunk of that money would go a long way in stopping and funding this pandemic. So what I'm in favor of is another round of stimulus checks, essentially, but stimulus checks that are continuous until this pandemic is over. If we're shutting down the economy, making people stay home, we don't want to put people in the situation where they have to decide to go to work and put themselves and others at risk or stay home and lose their job. So that's why we need to make sure that they're kept financially whole during this. So I'm in favor of continuous monthly checks.
At what level? At what amount?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot right now being talked about $2,000 a month. And then there's different, brackets. I'm in favor of the $1,200 again, like we first had. And then for children as well, any children you have, $500. So that's the level I would go with.
Would you extend the $600 weekly unemployment benefits that expired last month?
Yeah, that's a good question. So that's a tough one because before they decided to enact that, I was more in favor of doing what other countries did, like Denmark, where they guaranteed salary to keep people on payrolls instead of boosting unemployment. Because I think now we're kind of stuck in this situation where unemployment ran out, and now what do we do? Do we keep it going or do we rip the Band-Aid off? So I think at this point you have to keep it going because we already got ourselves into this mess. But again, I think that's something that should end once the pandemic ends. But people need the money one way or the other. And I will add the caveat that if we do have the continuous monthly payments from the stimulus, we wouldn't need the $600 unemployment, I would say.
Okay, so you're an IT consultant. Let's talk broadband, because every year our state provides millions of dollars in grants to expand access to high-speed internet. What more can be done in your part of the state from the level of Congress?
Yeah, so I'm a big supporter of making broadband access or internet access a right for all. So one thing I would do at the federal level is classify internet as a public utility, the same as, you know, water, electricity, things like that. So it's guaranteed, or at least the access is guaranteed. And you mentioned the state and has been given many grants in the past, and Governor Evers, I think, just put together recently a rural broadband task force. So I think my district, the 6th district, is mostly rural. So there's a lot of people that may have internet access, whether that's from their phone, wireless phone, or DSL, which are both very slow. So on top of just providing access or guaranteeing access, we need to up the standards on what minimal acceptable internet rate speed should be. And that should be 100 megabits down, which is what most people have in, say, Oshkosh or Madison. But right now, people rurally are sitting at about 10, which is very slow. And just face it, in today's day and age, if you don't have internet access, you can't partake in society.
Yeah, but the economics don't work for those providers to get in those rural areas, those last miles, to hook up a handful of families, of people, of homes and businesses. The economics of that don't work out. How do you make it work?
Yeah, so trying to run cable, like you said, for that last mile, it's definitely more expensive. So I'm in favor of a fixed point wireless internet connectivity system, or whatever you want to call it. So essentially, this is something that actually a lot of more mountain towns have done because they can't run cable. It's essentially a low satellite dish that, I don't want to get too technical, but it bounces signals off each other and keeps it going wirelessly. So I think that's a lot more efficient financially for having, especially like rural farmers, they can put the satellite dish up and you're good to go. So there's still obviously there's financial cost to this, but I agree with you. Running cable usually doesn't work. It's very expensive. So we need to have another way to do it.
We're talking with Mike Beardsley, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, as we continue our candidate conversations ahead of Tuesday's partisan primary, taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Rick in Fond du Lac has a question. Hi, Rick.
Hi there. Morning. I do have a question for the candidate, and, you know, I was wondering, in light of his statement about, you know, being in favor of single payer, you know, unified health care, what would his position on removing the supplemental Medicare Part B, C, D, all of the other supplemental insurance packages that elderly and retired and disabled are forced to buy to get full coverage for their own insurance or for their own health care, and funding that by changing the way that we calculate what the individual contribution to Social Security, Medicare is, to include all income, such as executive benefits package of, you know, stock options, use of a company jet, use of a company car.
Rick, let's let Mike respond here for funding healthcare for seniors.
Sure, yeah, that's a very good question. So I'm in favor of what you just laid out. With the single-payer system, the need for supplemental coverage just essentially won't exist anymore. Everyone's on the same plan anyways. So you won't need to buy supplemental insurance. And I think that's a common misconception for people that aren't on Medicare already or Medicaid, where they need to usually buy supplemental insurance just to have full coverage. So a single-payer system will fix that problem as well, I'll say. And how you pay for it, and how I currently propose you pay for a single-payer system specifically, is we're already paying a 1.45% on our income tax, which goes to Medicaid, essentially, which, again, most of us don't even have access to, but we're already paying for it. You bump that up to 4%, and everyone's paid for, everyone's on the plan. And then I think what you were touching on a bit there was changing the way we fund Social Security and Medicare again, including new ways like capital gains tax or wealth tax or things like that. So I'm in favor of going the route of also including a capital gains tax to help fund this as well. The fact is, we need to keep Social Security funded and boosted, and doing so just via income at the income tax at the current levels isn't going to get it done. So if we loop in capital gains tax as well, I think that would be good.
Rick, thank you for the question. Mike, let's turn to schools. Should all schools be open or closed for in-person instruction this fall?
Well, this is the toughest question of the day. So there's really no right answer. I think it's pretty clear, and I would hope most people understand that if we're forcing everyone to go to school, it's just inevitable that there's going to be some types of outbreaks. So how are we going to mitigate that? So I don't want to ride the fence, but I'm in favor of a hybrid approach here. And a lot of districts are giving people the option, but I'm more in favor of 2 or 3 days in person, the other days virtual. Doing 100% virtual, I think, would also be a good start to the year if you do the first three, four months to kind of try to push or try to avoid the situation of being in person as long as we can, and then moving into person later in the year once this is more under control. That's the route I would take.
Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mike Beardsley is a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. The district stretches from central Wisconsin to Lake Michigan and includes Portage, Oshkosh, Fond du Lac, Manitowoc, and Sheboygan. The Ideas Network is interviewing congressional candidates ahead of Tuesday's primary. Next candidate is tomorrow morning at 8. Democrat Matthew Bohr is also campaigning to unseat Republican Representative Glenn Grothman. Join us tomorrow at 8. Just ahead, it is On Point. What's the future of the Democratic Party? On Point, we'll dig in. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.